Welcome to the Empowering Agency Workers, a podcast for all temporary workers. If you're unsure of your rights, unsure how to find work, or just plain unsure, we're here to help. It's all too easy to be exploited, so your expert host, Julia Kermode, will empower you to succeed.
Thanks for joining me today, Rob. It's really good to have you here. And just for the purposes of our listeners, you founded Parasol, which is one of the largest and best known umbrella companies still operating with the UK. And you're still very much involved in this sector. So by founding Parasol, you obviously have huge amounts of knowledge about umbrella and where it all came from. And we'll get into that. But I know at the moment you're still involved in the sector as kind of a consultant and advising, particularly in relation to investors. So would you like to add anything on to that, just so our listeners know a little bit more about who you are?
Thank you, Julia. Yeah, I guess what's helpful to understand as well is that I started that part of my life as a contractor. So I was an IT contractor back in the day and had my own personal service company and my own accountant, etc. And it's that sort of journey that led to the creation of Parasol. So I guess a lot of the businesses in the sector are you know, often founded around accountancy and perhaps tax. And at the time, we were one of the few ones that came at it from a slightly different perspective with an emphasis on doing it easily and well, I think. And Parasol became reasonably successful, I think, as a result of that. So I'm delighted to be able to share some of those insights if I can.
Brilliant. Well, that's perfect. That's exactly why I wanted to talk to you today. It was all about your own experience as an IT contractor and how that led to setting up an umbrella. And I think that would actually be really helpful for our listeners to understand where umbrella came from, because it is a strange concept, isn't it?
Yeah, and I was part of that strange world, I guess, having my own little company. And as I said, my accountant doing my books and my affairs, albeit in a slightly less effective way than was ideal. And part of the frustration came from that lack of proactiveness in that regard. Mm. And accountants have always ran payrolls on behalf of other people, be that, you know, outsourcing the payroll or indeed putting people into some kind of little group and making things simple. And the project team I was on specifically had a couple of guys doing this, and I was getting really fed up with, you know, late information around VAT, you know, from the accountant, and spending a lot of money in reality on something which was not a lot more than basic bookkeeping at times. So just got a bit fed up with it all and wanted a simpler life. And he was working through this kind of really simplified payroll where he would basically tell the accountant how many hours he'd done. The accountant would then, felt like he would use a typewriter, generate an invoice. The payment would come in via the accountants again, and he would deduct normal tax and national insurances, etc., and pay my colleague. And it felt really, really simple. I had a background in finance and payroll systems anyway, coincidentally, so it felt quite comfortable as a concept. So I thought, well, I might do that. And with that kind of background, I thought, well, if I could do it for me, I could do it for some of the other guys on the team. You know, we could run our own little payroll, and you know, we could use Sage and be simple. And that was how the Parasol concept was born, out of wanting things to be faster, easier, simpler, with less complication. I was at that time on that particular project, I was a test project manager, and having to worry about whether corporation tax was correct or whether VAT was on time, and you know, how much money did I have? Is that my money or is that the Crown money? You know, it was getting a bit, you know, frustrating at least. So that plus the advent of the first version of IR35, which is that interesting tax for contractors to comprehend, meant that it was a good time to consider that. So Parasol was born out of all of that, with basic mantra of doing it a lot more efficiently and easily for contractors than even the version my colleague was running, which was pretty archaic and manual, but worked. And we took the business online in the heady days of the dot-com boom at the end of the 90s. And by April 2000, it was, timing-wise, it was ready to go. So we started with you know, online timesheets and invoicing and getting people paid simply and effectively.
Yeah, and so it sounds like you've done that brilliant entrepreneurial thing of you see something, you're not happy with how it's working for you, so you think, okay, well, I'll have a go. And obviously you brought your IT knowledge to the fore as well, because actually you're talking of online kind of timesheets and that sort of thing. And I think some listeners won't necessarily remember that far back to 2000, but I certainly do when I was kind of in the world of work then. And I remember the internet and stuff like that was quite revolutionary. It hadn't really got to grips, had it?
No. And in fact, you know, you can't avoid working with accountants, and, you know, the accountants, you know, we were working with at the time, they themselves were a bit dubious about expecting people to put information onto this thing called a website. So, it was different times. But it's really interesting, actually, Julia, because even in this day and age, you know, as we come to the end of 2020, 20 years on, effectively, I sometimes, you know, talk to people, both workers and, you know, owners of businesses and others, where some of those things are still not as consistent or as up to date as you might think. And there is this sort of variation around some of these processes that people have to face and try and understand, which can be very confusing. You know, contractors sometimes have to put timesheets in three different places, it feels like. So that whole world can be a bit, you know, a bit of a mess for people. So, the kind of raison d'etre was to make it simpler and easier, at least try to. And I think we achieved that. And I think it was, we weren't the first umbrella company, but I think we were the first to, you know, really put an emphasis on doing it quickly, efficiently, and taking some of the pain away, because, you know, basically it came from, the thing is that I just couldn't be bothered with the hassle, and you know, and that kind of message I think resonated with others ultimately, and we got a good success from it.
So in terms of that in particular, so was Umbrella originally really about paying people and that sort of thing, and really taking away all of that admin, or was there a bit more to it when it first started?
No, I think it's fair to say the original models were very much focused on simply running a payroll without consideration for the necessary conditions behind that to make it more valid. So, you know, when these things first started, you know, the employment contracts weren't employment contracts. They looked like contracts of, you know, providing a service between a business and an individual. And it's the evolution of that model which is created a much more secure and stable home for workers. So the early models were very much about simply, you know, getting a payroll done, paying somebody, and for goodness sake, that's just what we do. We don't do anything else. We just make payments and don't ask us any difficult questions around sick pay or maternity pay or holiday pay or all of the elements that, you know, employment comes with. So the early days were a little less secure, I suppose, in one respect, if you were a worker. And I suppose if you were one of the businesses around at that time, which, you know, we were, then, you know, it was technically, I suppose, easier. But I was really pleased to see, and hopefully help a little bit in the evolution of that market.
Yeah. So just picking up on that. So Umbrella today is obviously quite different to when it first started. It's evolved quite considerably. And I always define Umbrella as employing temporary workers and enabling them to work for different end clients, so different short-term assignments. And so that for me is how a compliant umbrella works. So in terms of that employment side must have come along sort of gradually over time.
Yeah, and I think it would be unfair to suggest that it wasn't also related to changes in legislation, you know, from a European and UK perspective, which had an influence there. But those factors combined over time to create a way more secure and stable overarching condition where individuals can get employment rights and benefits, you know, within an entity that allows them to operate in the way you've described. And that's the whole terminology of umbrella, is this overarching cover for you as the worker to be somewhat protected. And I always felt it was really important that we tried to, you know, translate that into this is your home, you know, Parasol, your home, and others are, you know, these compliant umbrella businesses, that you should consider those as your employer, and they should be there to help protect and support you, and to the extent that they're able to. And that really is the essence of it for me. It's about providing safe shelter and providing stability and efficiency when, you know, sometimes you're coming into an environment which is very odd. You know, if you've always had a full-time employed gig and now you're coming into this slightly different world of working on different assignments, then it is a change. And, you know, one of the really great things about an umbrella employment condition, if you're you know, interested in moving around an industry or different sectors or different end clients, then, you know, you can work for Google for 3 months, you can then be on the BBC for 7 months, you can then be working for Shell for another period of time, but the overarching stability has been provided and you've got something on your CV which demonstrates that. So I think that's the concept that's emerged and is now kind of very well established. I still think, you know, the UK has a struggle to understand and explain what temporary working is versus full-time working, because that's very blurred if you think about an umbrella. But fundamentally, it should be there for the benefit of the workers and to get them paid quickly and not to be taking silly risks around tax and all that nonsense. It's a very straightforward model at its very core.
Yeah, actually, that's so true. And you know, you talk about the overarching kind of benefits that you take with you. You could almost say you take an umbrella of benefits with you wherever you're working. And I think that continuity of employment is probably really, really important right now. Just thinking of people, you know, people's financial positions. So that employment history, if you stay with the same umbrella for kind of however long you're kind of doing this for, I think is really important if you're trying to access finance and that sort of thing. Would you say that's true from your experience of running one?
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, you can either use an umbrella type business for a short term stopgap opportunity. And we often found that people approached it in that guise to begin with, and then actually were quite surprised by the kind of stability and flexibility combination it provided. And, you know, we had people, and they probably still do, you know, on the books for a long, long time. We're talking years, not you know, weeks or months. And that kind of environment allows you to have an employment contract, employment records, pay YEs paid at source. There's no kind of self-employment miscommunication, which, you know, being self-employed and getting a mortgage, for example, is a challenge. You know, variable income is a challenge. And whilst, you know, this model is still intrinsically linked to usually, you know, a sense of billing your time, which can be variable, it's way less variable than those kind of other models that are more tax related, I guess. So I think it definitely provides that condition by which you can have normal ish benefits and environment, but at the same time this flexibility to be able to work on different assignments in different kind of sectors, you know, skill set and so on.
One of the things that that irritates me slightly about some umbrellas is when they're talking people through their services and they say it's like employment, and I'm like, no, there's a contract of employment there. It actually is employment, you know. but we digress. So it is a strange concept though for workers when they've not come across it before. So the pathway to umbrella for a lot of workers is often via their recruitment firm. So they would be getting a role, let's say 6 months at Shell or whatever it might be, and then their recruitment firm says, oh, you need to choose one of these umbrellas. And it's at that point they're kind of like, what? I don't understand that. And one of the things we haven't really got into yet is around pay and that side of things. Now, it's probably worth just explaining a little bit for listeners as to how pay works with the recruitment agency and the umbrella. And we will go on to a little bit more about what things have happened to make that more transparent. But if you could outline how it should work, and then we can talk a bit more around that.
Yes, it's a really good point, Julia. I think there's an element of grayness to it all, which doesn't help the individual trying to navigate this. But essentially, a recruitment agency or a recruitment agent will agree a rate of pay with an end hirer for the deployment of a worker, and that worker will then get a different rate of pay, because obviously there's a margin for the recruitment business, and that income that's talked about between the recruitment agent and the worker is what's called the gross income. And that amount of money is often confused as being the worker's money, but essentially that's the amount of money that's paid to the employment business, the umbrella, to have its employee do the job. So, this becomes slightly challenging to understand, because the recruitment agency will often talk about things like limited company rates of pay and umbrella rates of pay. But essentially you as the worker need to understand that when that's talked about, that's the gross amount of money that's paid to the umbrella business, which then must take off the taxes, the national insurance, pension, all manner of different things to actually calculate that individual's wages. Yeah. And most good and compliant umbrella businesses will have the ability to explain and illustrate that to a worker. But it does cause some consternation at times where you as the individual think you're getting £22 an hour because that's what the agent said, but in reality that's a different number because of those calculations that have to take place. You can't provide the employment conditions and the benefits and the securities and the insurances without there being some income to do that. So it's important to remember that point.
Yes, that's so true. There are, last time I looked, there are 84 statutory benefits and rights of employment, and the umbrellas, by being employers, have to give those, and those will have a cost to them.
When you're in that position as an individual, you have to remember some of the other previous work scenarios you've been in where the businesses you've worked for have needed to make profit to cover its costs and to have income to cover its costs, and it's no different. The reason it's muddier or a bit grayer is because there's quite a slim difference between the amount that a worker's kind of charged out at and the amount the worker receives. It's pretty tight often, and that creates an element of confusion. But if you think about it logically, I am employed. I have a business that's employing me, and it has costs of employment. Now, in a perfect world, those differences between how much a recruitment agency charges out an individual and how much an individual receives would be clearer and more obvious. But, it's things like employment costs that, kind of confuse the issue. But it's my money. I'm not an employee. No, you are actually. You're an employee of a business that's providing rights, benefits and security. And it has to pass those costs on. It has to pay those over to the government. It's not keeping it and using it. It has to deduct it and move it on. Exactly. So the umbrella business becomes a solid home for doing that. But at the same time, it can be slightly confusing if you've never approached it with that mindset.
Yes, and I think that at the moment, with there being more people potentially temping and working through recruitment agencies, I think that confusion will continue for a little bit. However, in April 2020, key information documents became a legal requirement where recruitment businesses are required to give their workers information in a standard format about how their pay is calculated. And I think that is already proving very helpful in clarifying how Umbrella works and the financial side of things. I'm not yet convinced that the key information documents are being used across the board. So I think it's important for our listeners to know that it's a legal obligation for their recruitment agency to provide them. And I think as that beds in, it will settle down and recruitment businesses won't be able to accidentally give the wrong rate. And I don't know if anything you've seen in the market since that came in April sort of supports what I'm saying. Is it having an impact yet or?
I think it is, Julia. And I think what happens technically is that quite often the recruitment business is outsourcing that requirement to the umbrella business to provide back the information. So, yeah. It is happening.
The recruitment agency's perspective then, why do they often require someone to choose an umbrella company? Because they could potentially just pay people through their own payroll. So I guess it's a saving for the recruitment business. Is that the driving force or kind of how do you see it?
Well, being really truthful about this, Julia, I think there are a number of factors at play here. Mm. One will be, if I'm a recruitment business and I'm worried about, workers asking me for my employment rights, then I want to outsource that risk and that problem. And they do that in their contracts by saying the employer, in this case, the umbrella business, is liable and responsible for those. So it gives protection to the supply chain because what the end client and the recruitment business in that supply chain don't want is a bunch of guys saying, well, you've mistreated us or we're not getting maternity pay or holiday pay is incorrect. They want somebody else to look after that problem for them, which is fine. And that's what, a good umbrella business can do. Finally, the drive around compliance, reputational risk, doing things correctly and properly is now the dominant factor. So if you're in this supply chain with an end hirer and a recruitment business, workers and umbrella companies, this has got to be safe, it's got to be reliable, and it's got to be done properly. So I think that's the real driver here now. 100% that's created a more collaborative environment aligned to key information, changes in legislation. And really, I think, for me, one of the biggest drivers in the last 12 months, 18 months has been around reputational risk as well.
Yeah.
I think some of the large corporates are finally waking up to the fact that they can't be surprised by consumer behavior affecting their brand, regardless of how they think they are operating. So, compliance is critical and is the bedrock. And then you add to that the risks around your reputation, which are often hard won and easy to lose. You really have to be on your game and do things properly, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it's interesting what you're just saying there in terms of kind of the heads of the supply chain, so your high street brands or whatever they might be, becoming a bit more aware of what's going on throughout their supply chain. And I know that there have been different things in recent years. I mean, most famously, probably Sports Direct was where probably a lot of that started. But I'm hoping that the clients at the top of the supply chain are becoming more aware of what's going on through their supply chain and not just making decisions based on finances. And we were chatting before we got into this official kind of interview about our views in relation to that. So, I mean, what are your thoughts? I think there's more to be done, but you tell us.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the end hirers, the corporates, the people who need the flexibility and skills and talents of temporary workers, are slowly but surely waking up to the fact that they can't ignore what is happening in the supply chain. So, you know, and often in the large corporates, you've got an incredibly complex supply chain whereby, you know, you've got an entity which manages the recruitment, which then subcontracts out to a range or a panel of recruitment businesses who themselves then re-subcontract. And then somewhere down that supply chain, an umbrella-like business is trying to manage the payroll. And below that, here's the guys who are actually doing the work. And historically, the end hirers have simply said, we don't really need to know about that. And, okay, let's just make sure that our risks are mitigated if something goes wrong. But in case in point, Sports Direct and others, you know, you can really see now where that really starts to become something you can't ignore. And I think, you know, the changes in legislation will put even more pressure on those businesses to be transparent and understand. But it's a really difficult thing, isn't it? Because, you know, the chat we had around this supply chain is that, you know, Brits love a bargain. We don't really give a second thought to the poor guy who's delivering our deliveries as to the fact that he's on minimum wage at best, because the supply chain, it's free delivery, it's you know, low cost, it's et cetera. And that's a much bigger topic, isn't it? But it has an impact. And as we transition to a more flexible economy and a kind of more varied economy, these challenges will remain. And that will be good for umbrella businesses because they can provide that portability of employment. But at the same time, the end hirers need to have more responsibility for what's going on in their supply chain. They may not be able to do anything about it, but they should be aware. And then from the bottom up, you know, workers need to be empowered more to know exactly what they're getting themselves involved with and how they are protected, how their income is calculated, and what they are allowed to receive benefits for. But the margins in all of that are incredibly challenging. So and that's not likely to change in the current economic environment. So I suspect there'll be quite a lot of choppy waters. But I think in the next 5 to 10 years, what we'll see emerge is a clearer position that when you engage in temporary working, you kind of know where you are and you understand it. And I think everybody's got a part to play in that. And I'd like to see a future where those workers, you know, kind of get it and know what they're doing and aren't baffled and bamboozled by this complexity. I think that's really important for society in general.
Just in my kind of lifetime, we've seen quite a bit of change towards an ethical way of operating. And I think that it's almost inevitable that that change will reach procurement decisions in big businesses. I don't think we're there yet. I think there's more that can be done. I know that the government is looking at joint responsibility and whether businesses should be responsible for everything that goes on in their supply chain. Now, I think that then gets a little difficult when they're outsourcing services, and at what point can they be responsible for how those people treat the workforce. But I do think I do think we're heading in the right direction with that train of thought, at least.
I'm an optimist by nature, but I think the direction of travel around practice, legislation, societal behavior, consumer behavior will lead us to that destination. I think the businesses that reflect and adapt to that will be the ones that, you know, come out of the other end and have a focus on that. And it'll be a difficult transition for many because of this, you know, tight relationship with the supply chain and the recruitment businesses within it. And that's often done for very good reasons to do with efficiency and safety and security. So decoupling some of that and changing those positions will be important. But I imagine, and I have some knowledge of this, that, you know, HR procurement in end hirers are way more interested now in understanding that supply chain dynamic because they themselves are probably quite often out of the loop as to what is happening, so and how people are getting treated, and they need to get better at that.
So that's a very good point, actually. When you are employed by an umbrella, then they are your employer. Would it be the umbrella that someone would go to if they were being mistreated within the workplace, or should they? I mean, there might not even really be any rules around this, but what would be kind of the your position on it anyway?
Yeah, so when a worker is employed by an umbrella company, he/she is provided with a kind of an overarching employment condition which has got all of the normal rights and benefits mm-hmm. attached to it, and that includes the ability to talk to somebody around HR issues or all of that. Now, it gets a bit complicated because the end hirer, when you're on, you know, let's take a classic example whereby somebody's deployed at Amazon to work. They're employed via, they're found via a recruitment business, and that recruitment business then suggests that Janet works for an umbrella company. Now, in that scenario, Janet has the protection of the umbrella company, its insurances, its HR policies, its health and safety, you know, conditions. But to some extent, what the end hirer wants to do and how the end hirer wants to operate can confuse or overlay on top of that. So in the scenario you described, Janet probably faces a challenge there of kind of working out where to go.
Mm.
Her first port of call can be the umbrella company. That's her employer.
Yeah.
She's seconded from that employer to work in that environment. And that employment business should have the ability to help her with that. Now, in reality, what often happens is, you know, if that was a localized issue to do with something, then perhaps there's a localized solution to that can be resolved by, you know, supervision on site. And in reality, you know, that is probably more what happens than it necessarily coming back to the umbrella business. Mm. But fundamentally, Janet is protected and has the rights associated by being employed by that umbrella company. So, in our example there, she can absolutely have recourse on that back to those and have that protection. But often it gets sorted locally. And that's where sometimes it can get a bit lacking in transparency and a bit lacking in clarity. But nonetheless, that is the absolute bottom line.
So it's probably easiest in that scenario for Janet to just talk to whoever at the site she's working and kind of get things resolved. But importantly for Janet, then she's also got that backup of her employer as the umbrella. And I do know, so two things on that. One very important piece of legislation for all employers you touched on was health and safety. And I do know that some umbrellas will provide things like PPE and that sort of thing. So I'm thinking in the construction sector, there was a situation where the recruitment agency and the site weren't able to provide someone with PPE. So the umbrella, out of their own kind of profits, if you like, because they have a legal duty to, then they provided about £300 worth of PPE to a particular worker. And I think, you know, you could argue about who ultimately was responsible, but in that situation, that umbrella legally was responsible and wanted to look after that worker to the best of their ability. So that's the decision that they took. But coming back to Janet, and if she can't resolve her issue locally, she can then go to the umbrella. And I know that there have been examples of umbrellas, you know, who end up even getting involved in tribunals and that sort of thing. It doesn't happen often, though, does it?
No, and it shouldn't, because ultimately you would hope that, you know, like in most businesses, those issues can be resolved. But yeah, you're absolutely right.
One reason why this whole sector exists is that clients like Google or whoever else, you know, aren't necessarily in a position to give people permanent work. And so that is why there's this whole sector of recruitment businesses and then umbrellas that will employ those people. So actually, these individuals are probably getting a better deal, if you like, if I can put it that way, by being employed by an umbrella than perhaps just being a temp directly with the Google or whatever, because at least with an umbrella they do get those employment rights and they have to by law.
That's correct, Julia. The very nature of the way of work has changed and continues to change, and the current umbrella incarnation is the kind of probably the early stage of the management of all of that. It creates a condition by which at least you can get things done, get your taxes sorted. You don't have to worry.
Yeah.
And you can just focus on your assignment, or in many cases now, multiple assignments. You know,
yes.
I think people are working on different things at different times in different conditions. And an umbrella provides a really good stability for someone who has a primary focus on an assignment and can operate in that way. Probably doesn't work as well yet for, you know, you're a gig worker, you're delivering, or you are, you know, got multiple different kind of assignments. Some's a self-employed, some's kind of, you know, that's harder to do. But I do think, actually, platforms will develop to support that in the future too. But for now, if you need to find an assignment or you want to work in a temporary form and have something between my own business, which is increasingly difficult and complex, and kind of no control or no kind of sense of help, then it provides a really, really safe harbour for that kind of volume of work that people are doing now.
Yeah, that's so true. And we haven't actually really covered, it's just a simple fact, that umbrellas will pay someone 100% through PAYE. And we are talking next week a little bit about schemes that are not umbrellas that people need to be aware of. So we're not going to cover that. We're not going to cover that today. But yeah, just for the purposes of listeners, always make sure that all of your income is being paid through PAYE, and you can check your tax record with HMRC directly, and it makes sense to do that. But one of the things you just touched on was the fact that, you know, you can stay with the same umbrella for however long you want, and you can work with different client businesses that you're working for, and also different recruitment firms, but still be with the same umbrella, which I think is an important point for people to kind of take that on board as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it does allow you to have the overarching home and then definitely work for different businesses doing different things, and that creates quite an interesting, you know, work-life balance opportunity, really, because you can do different things for different people and learn different things, and it's I think that's quite powerful at times.
That's one of the positives that I always think about in relation to this sector. So there's a bit of perception sometimes in the general media that being a temp worker of whatever form is somehow more precarious than employment, but actually, well, recently, I'm not sure we can say employment is that stable. But let's not get into that side of things. One of the benefits, certainly, of being a temporary worker is that you can try different things. You know, if you've got the skill sets to kind of transfer into different industries and try different things, and I think that's useful right now for people.
Oh, completely, and you know, align that to, you know, kind of some stability around, you know, your finances and the ability to demonstrate to a financial institution or others that, you know, you have an employment contract and an employment wage going into your bank account. It, you know, it makes for a solid partnership, I think. So the good umbrella businesses that are out there, with the good recruitment businesses that are out there, with the you know, sensible end hirers, create an environment where ultimately you can thrive. And you know, over the years I've spent many, many conversations with guys who, you know, basically came into this just as a kind of stopgap. You know, they've been made redundant or got fed up and just took a little bit of work for a bit of time, and then, you know, 6 years down the line find themselves still really enjoying the variety and the opportunities that it presents.
I think that probably wraps it up. I mean, I can probably talk for a lot longer about umbrellas. I'm sure you can too. We could get into all sorts of stuff, but we probably wouldn't have any listeners left. So and unless there's anything that you wanted to say that we haven't covered.
No, I think we've gone through the basics, and you know, just to reassure people that you know, those businesses that are decent will help, and you know, it's not necessarily as difficult, as scary as one might think. Mm. And you know, just be mindful of the information that you receive, and you know, have a jolly good read, and make sure you're comfortable, make an informed decision, and you know, technically, those good businesses will help you with that. They won't make that difficult.
Yeah, that is so true, actually. I mean, how many of us do read the information we're given? But if we do, then there's lots out there that can help people. Yeah,
this is about people's income, isn't it, Julia? So yeah. You know, you'd be silly not to at least have an attempt at a read and just ask some bit.
Yeah.
Nothing, you know, there's no such thing as a silly question in this regard when it comes to your income, is there?
No, exactly. Well, thank you again so much for joining us today. Really appreciate your time. And I'll put some listening notes out to accompany the episode with a bit of background about you in case anyone wants to find out more.
No problem. It's been a pleasure, Julia. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Empowering Agency Workers, hosted by Julia Kermode. For more information on today's discussion, please visit iwork.co.uk, where you can also join our growing community. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you did, then we would love you to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. We'll be back at the same time next week.